This is the World Retail Podcast, the premier platform for global retail leaders, where vision meets insight and innovation takes center stage. From AI to embedded finance, leadership to the ever-evolving consumer, we bring you the voices shaping the future of retail. World Retail Podcast, your front row seat to retail's next chapter.
Hello and welcome to the World Retail Podcast, brought to you by the World Retail Congress. My name is Ian McGarrigle and I am the founder and chair of the World Retail Congress. This episode is part of a special series called Retail Leadership Voices, which I'm delighted to be co-hosting with the global team from the executive search firm Spencer Stuart Associates. This series will bring you high-level interviews with some top retail leaders to learn more about their career journey, their perspective on what it means to be a leader in retailing today, their thoughts on the industry, and above all, we will try and find out more about them on a personal level. Today's interview took us to Hong Kong to speak with Jennifer Wu, the chairman and CEO for the Lane Crawford Joyce Group, which, for those that don't know, is one of Asia's leading premier fashion, brand management, and distribution groups. It was founded in 1850 and has navigated through extraordinary change throughout the years and is established as one of the key names in the dynamic Asian retail market. As we heard from Jennifer, change remains a constant and she continues to ensure that the business reflects the needs of its customers and the market. I was joined for this special interview by Catherine Kwong, Spencer Stuart's global partner who co-leads the firm's Greater China business and manages the Hong Kong office. Catherine oversees fashion, retail, luxury, and hospitality and leisure for Spencer Stuart. I very much hope you enjoy this episode with Catherine and I in conversation with Jennifer. Hello, Catherine, and thank you for joining me for this special interview as part of the Retail Leadership Voices series for the World Retail Podcast. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me here, Ian.
That's a pleasure. So as I mentioned, Catherine, in my introduction, the Lane Crawford Joyce Group is one of Asia's leading retail groups. But as someone based in Hong Kong and who has worked with retailers across Asia for many years, I'd love to get your views on the strength of Lane Crawford Joyce.
Sure. Thank you, Ian. I must say that Lane Crawford Joyce Group is an iconic brand. It's also a pride of Hong Kong. It's really unique. The most distinctive strength, you know, I could see is their ability to keep transforming themselves through innovations. They're very capable in keeping with times and the global trend and bring the world of luxury to us in Greater China and Asia. Many of us see them as a trendsetter and also an innovator. They just keep inspiring us. Lane Crawford Joyce Group is a heritage brand, as you said. They have established for more than 170 years and they are still always at the forefront. Especially during the past 20 years, it was a very challenging period in Hong Kong and China when we were going through SARS, economic downturn, and also the pandemic. They have never stopped reinventing themselves. Their ability to transform from a department store to a specialty store is a clear success. The other key strength that I see is they really know the consumers very well. They create differentiated customer experience, bring new retail concepts, new channels to connect different generation customer. It's all very powerful. The other thing I really appreciate is they create desire, curiosity, and expectation for customers to go into their stores to look for something new and exciting. That's why the brands love to work with them because they attract customers to connect with their brands. The other unique thing, you know, is about their business model. They have three distinctive businesses to manage: premium fashion retail, brand management, and also distributions. This has put Lane Crawford Joyce Group in a strong position to manage a broad portfolio of brands and create strong partnership with multiple brand owners and help them to expand in China and Asia. Last but not the least, apart from helping other international brands to build their businesses, they also create their own brands, which is always seen as challenging and risky.
Thanks, Catherine. I think that sets us up really, really well, gives us lots to talk about. And it's now my great pleasure to introduce Jennifer. Jennifer, hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well, Ian. Very nice to be here today and very nice to see you too, Catherine.
Thanks very much for joining us, Jennifer, for this episode of the World Retail Podcast. And I said in my introduction that you are chairman and CEO of the Lane Crawford Joyce Group, of course, but I should also have said and should say that you're a member of our World Retail Congress Advisory Board, which we're really grateful for. And thank you for all your input, but also that the Congress was able to honour and recognise you in 2023 with membership of the World Retail Hall of Fame when we met in Barcelona. So I remember when you spoke at the special Hall of Fame dinner, Jennifer, you talked about your career and how you joined the group in, I think it was 1999. So here we are more than 25 years later and you're chairman and CEO. So my first question really is, you know, when you started, did you hope or expect that your career would follow that path? What was in your mind when you first joined the company?
Yeah, 25 years. Wow. I mean, thinking about this question, I mean, does anyone really think about being a CEO or chairman at the beginning of the career? For me, it wasn't really like that. 25 years ago, it was really about learning the ropes of the business, understanding the business, and at the same time, running the business. There really wasn't a lot of time or headspace to think about my position in the 25 years. Retail doesn't give you that time either.
That's true.
If you are talking about my initial thinking for my career, well, I have to say, this is the truth. I was essentially tricked into the business by my father. It wasn't really my intention to get into the business. So it didn't really all click until IFC, our flagship store in Hong Kong, opened. So the manifestation of that was when it all really came together, because this business is really, truly multifaceted, from how we work with our vendors, to how we work with our internal teams, to how we interact and connect with our customers. And really, when we were able to show our flagship store and present it to our customers, it was really seeing that magic be created and see the impact of that for our customers, for our community, and for the industry. It was really a very memorable moment.
Yeah. Catherine.
Yeah. Thank you, Ian. That's great. You know, Jennifer, I mean, what a story to start. You have held a number of different positions across the group, such as in operation, in merchandising, marketing, and finance. Which of these experiences were particularly valuable when you first became a CEO? Did you feel you were well prepared for the intensity of the CEO role?
Great question. Well, I think my age at that time, when I first started, I was in my early 20s, and you know, so that was really the most valuable and the big advantage. It was my youth, my age. So the youth in my years, the number of seasons under my belt at that time, you know, I was a blank sheet of paper and I was a very open student for the business. And of course, my youth and my energy, I was able to pull all-nighters frequently to keep up with the pace. I started in the best place in retail, which is product. It connected me directly to the customers, from the buying process to how it showed up in the store, and then seeing the selling process as well. So that experience really resonated and stayed with me. And at that time, because I was the new customer, I was the target of the repositioning, that younger fashion customer. So yeah. I guess the lens that I saw the business through, my worldview, the customer's worldview, the expectation of a higher, more relevant, more personalized luxury experience for the customer did not exist at that time. So I was really able to put a color through the business that was very new and fresh. But really, nothing really prepares you to be a CEO. But if I had to reflect back to my 23-year-old self, I would say the preparation that made the biggest difference was my family's upbringing. There was a really clear work ethic, a sense of responsibility, and a very deep layer of humility. So I often speak about a business lesson I learned at a very young age from my father. Where there's a will, there's a way. That's become the mantra in my life. If one door closes, there's always a window. So this mantra has really built the resilience and my positive mindset and has carried me through a lot of the different cycles over the years. So if you ask my colleagues, that is something I repeat quite consistently and quite often.
Well, that's very interesting. Hearing about the work ethics, all that your father share with you, were these the reasons that convinced you to come over at that young age? Just curious.
No, he tricked me. He really literally tricked me.
You've got to tell us, how did he trick you? What did he promise you?
He said it was just an internship, just to get over the summer, right? So I was like, okay, fine. I didn't even want to live in Hong Kong at that time. I was living in Boston and thinking about going to New York. So he said, oh, well, you're in between visas or something in the States, so why don't you come back for that break and just do an internship for a few weeks? So I turned up for the internship and I had an office built for me and a cards printed out. And I said, maybe this is not just for a month.
How interesting. It turned out to be like a 20 odd years, career for you.
Well, that's the amazing thing about retail. It's quite intoxicating in that way.
I was going to say, did the retail bug get you then? Did it? It didn't take long.
It didn't take long. And as I said, one of the first things I did was to go into buying. So I got completely, sucked into the magic of this business. And it was the handbag business that I started with in the buying department. So it's such a fun business. And
Was that your father's plan to put you in handbags so that he can keep you in the business?
The handbag business at that time was a very different business than today, right? So it wasn't about the it bags. So there was it was a different dynamic. So working with the vendors at that time was super dynamic, and it was a very different kind of business. So it was a business that allowed you to really work on curation from a 360 point of view, and also creation together with the vendors. So it was very fun.
I see. Great. So was there any, surprise or biggest surprise as a CEO?
Yes, I would say.
And also, now, when you look back, if you could give some advice to your younger self, what would that be?
Yeah, I would say the biggest surprise as a CEO is the dichotomies that exist in the role, right? So for example, the concept that being a CEO has nothing to do with me as an individual, but everything to do with me as an individual, right? To be egoless and to be anchored in the self. Mm-hmm. It's about being able to be simultaneously doing both of those things together elegantly. Mm-hmm. So another dichotomy is understanding and knowing are two different things. Just knowing as quickly as you can is one thing, but it also requires the number of seasons and the time under your belt to really understand, right? So it's really to be able to understand that these things work together. So this is the same concept as the international bestseller book, Think Fast and Slow. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the older I get, the more I see that this pattern exists, this dichotomy exists in business and also in life. Being a mother, I truly appreciate the saying, the days are long, but the years are short. Yeah, really understanding what that means, and appreciating what that means. So if you asked me to give myself advice, I would say, and this is especially meaningful being Chinese, is that being humble and selfless doesn't mean no self and lowering oneself. That pride doesn't have to be arrogant, and humility doesn't mean without self. Mm-hmm. Right? So yeah. I think really understanding the depth of those concepts is something surprising to me as a CEO, and a real privilege to learn.
So when I talk to CEOs, I'm always in awe of how you need to keep a focus on the short term, the medium term, and the longer term. I mean, it's that balance, isn't it? Of having that vision for the longer term, but also focused on today's business, but also tomorrow.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And to be able to move elegantly and fluidly through all that, that's the skill.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jennifer, it seems that, you know, you have a lot of realization through that journey. And I understand that you also support a lot of startup, and that, you know, startup, you know, also full of younger leaders. So some of the advice that, you know, you have for yourself, have you sort of also shared with the younger leaders that, you know, you encounter?
Yes, all the time. I think if you ask where there's a will, there's a way, I say all the time. There are a lot of other things that I repeat all the time to the team. So yes, I am, if anything, consistent.
That sounds great. It seems like that is your motto, you know, when you go through that journey. Now, the other thing that, you know, I would like to ask is, you're on the board of the Asia Art Archive. You're also a quad member of the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. What have you learned in these outside roles that have helped you at the Lane Crawford Joyce Group?
Yes, my external board roles have really helped me understand that although businesses are different in nature, that businesses are also pretty similar because of the people factor. So the human condition is universal, and so the problems, the solutions, the strategies end up generally being quite similar, which means it's okay to have struggle. It's okay to have challenges. No one is alone and no one is immune.
Wow. You know, I'm amazed, you know, to hear what you have said, because it seems like that, you know, you can able to sort of strike a balance, you know, your between your time to run the business while also advising external boards to live different industry. I think that is a very amazing skill. How did you do that? I mean, what gives you the energy to deal with that intensity?
I often get asked that question about my energy level, and it's very simple.
We can do that here, so that's why we ask.
Yeah, it's very simple. I sleep.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's my magic. I am a very good sleeper.
Oh, that's good. I think that's one thing that, you know, is a unique skill for leader. You get good sleep quality.
It is. I'm one of those that can hit the pillow and fall asleep right away.
That's great. Now, the other thing is, you know, on reflection, what has been one of the most challenging times or experiences in your retail career? And what did you learn from that?
Yeah. Thinking about this question, you know, there really isn't one situation or one moment. It is more about the journey and the stations along the way. So there's this quote from author John Maxwell. It says, people change in four seasons. When they hurt enough, they have to. When they see enough, they're inspired to. When they learn enough, they want to. When they receive enough, they are able to. So what I have learned is that the solution comes from within. And often in situations where it is everyone else's problem or it's the market situation, but the problem is invariably about you and your internal world, whether it's in the personal context or it's in the business context with the leadership team. If one heeds the signs that you see around you and the challenges that are being faced, and then you face that moment to really look at what it's trying to tell you, the answers are usually very simple and clear. And once you face those challenges and go through them, it really does propel you forward. And that is what growth is about. It's not avoiding the problems, but going through them and dealing with them head on and realizing that the solution comes from within. It's not that outside things have to change, but your internal world has to shift and change.
By hearing this, you know, I'm curious, can I double click on the point that you talk about? You know, it's about you and your also your internal world. Does it mean that you have a lot of like dialogue with yourself, you know, when you are facing challenges or you're facing problems?
Yes. And dialogue with people, the support system around me as well. Absolutely. It's about having dialogue. It's about making sure that you talk through these problems. And in today's world, I think with the iPhone, with technology, everybody has a tendency to go down into their own echo chamber, and it becomes very isolating. And I think the fear of connecting and the fear of having dialogues is growing over time. So that is the antithesis of what we need as human beings. We actually need more connection. We actually need to dialogue with each other. But at those times, dialoguing with yourself or with your support system might seem like the most difficult thing to do. But that's exactly what you have to do. And it's just the first step to unwinding whatever challenges you face.
Yeah.
And is your support system, does it include just people in the business if it's a business issue, or do you include people outside of the business where you have a challenge that you're trying to, you know, work through in your mind?
Absolutely. I'm very fortunate to have a very rich support system around me. A lot of people who I have connected with over the years, and it's really invaluable to be able to tap into those networks. But again, even if the networks are there, it's whether or not you do tap into them at those moments. The moments that, you know, you struggle with the most is you need to say, okay, I need to call this person. I need to kind of say, I'm kind of stuck. But just by saying you're stuck to someone just helps you and unstick enough to get you forward instead of being stuck. That's the amazing thing about this process.
Well, I think that's a great sharing, because you know, when we are talking with a lot of you know, CEO, I mean, the internal dialogue is one thing, but also, I mean, bouncing idea with others, you always got some inspiration. And also, you know, in a way that is to release, you know, some of your pressure and also get some, you know, fresh idea. I think that's a great, great sharing. Thank you. Now, Jennifer, you know, other questions about, you know, innovations. When serving as the president of Link Profit, you and your team successfully repositioned the department store model to a specialty business, and your company is still seen as a leader when it comes to innovation. And yet innovation is something often, you know, trips up companies regardless of their size or sector. So what's your secret? What are the key ingredients for innovation in your experience? Share with us.
So who says we don't get tripped up by it? Sometimes innovation comes from tripping up, you know, from trying, from daring, from stretching and then failing. The main rule of thumb is to be super clear, though, on your intention. And then the project will inevitably develop and morph and adjust, as projects usually do. And the most important thing is just to hold on to that original intention, and the rest will fall into place. So if you lose that intention, and it's very easy to do that through distraction, dilution, and derailment by other people's agenda, you tend to lose your way and not have a clear way back or forward. And then at the end of the day, there is no value creation because things have been diluted or derailed or distracted, right? So I think it's to expect there to be tripping up, expect mm-hmm. there to be mishaps, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then being able to understand, okay, what was that you wanted to create at the start? And following mm-hmm. that through again.
Mm-hmm. I see. It's interesting that the point you talk about, you know, hold up, you know, with, you know, your intention. So how can you stay focused? Because, I mean, particularly in retail, there are lots of things going around you, fast paced, ever changing. So how can you sort of like stay focused on your intention? How did you do that?
Well, you have to be very clear at the start what the intention is. Like if you go into a project and not have a clear intention, absolutely you can't stay focused because there's just too many ideas, too many things that you want to achieve, too many impacts you want to have. And it's tempting. It's really tempting to want to do as much as you can with every project. But that's essentially where you need to kind of hold yourself back, or you need to kind of recalibrate and figure out what it is that you want to create. What value do you want to create? What impact do you want to make? And it's never a lot of things. It's usually one very important thing you want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Coming back to Catherine's great question there about how you changed the department store model and repositioned the business, that when you look back now, I mean, it seems what I've heard and read, it was a pivotal chapter in the history of the business. And that it feels like it was a big shift that you had to invest a lot of and bring a lot of people with you. Can you talk through when you look back now at that fundamental change in the business, which has driven the business on so successfully since then? But it presumably was risk attached to it.
Yes, we changed our model. You know, from one store manifestation to the flagship store. So going back to what that original intention was, it's really the consumer, really understanding what the consumer wanted and making sure that we create something that our customers deserved in our market, and being very true to that. And there was a lot of tempting other agendas that came in throughout the project. I think commercially, you could get distracted very easily because, dollar signs can be distracting in the short term. So making sure that we kept asking the question about that new fashion luxury customers and staying really true to that intention right the way through that project was really important. And anytime it got a little bit murky, a little bit more difficult, then we went back to ask the same question, okay, why are we doing this? And inevitably the answer was very simple.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Go back to the original intention and forget the tempting other agendas, as great as they look. Mm-hmm, in the mm-hmm. short term, it would derail you in the long term.
That's right. And then, you know, on that point, I'm sure, you know, when there are innovations, there are always some pushback, maybe from the team or maybe from mm-hmm. other parties. So how do you deal with this pushback, you know, through that journey?
Yes. Sometimes some people are more visual. Some people are more audio, they need to hear the right things or see the right things. Some people need to see it manifested physically for them to be able to understand it. So with our flagship store, I think it was really repeating that vision and trying to paint the picture in all different ways to get everybody on board, everybody understanding what their intention was, and saying it in 100 different ways so that because everybody hears things differently or sees things differently. So trying to get to that common understanding took a lot of dialogue, took a lot of communication.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I see. Right. Jennifer, another question. Early on, you're talking about, you know, really understand the consumer's need. So how do you go about identifying what consumer needs? Is it more an art or science? And also, where do you get inspiration? You know, we're all very curious.
Yes, it's about art and science. It's about both. And it's about finding the balance and the right mix of the two. And they both, the art and the science, both have to be alive and well, and they need to be there in equal measure and equal quality to be able to then translate to a authentic outcome for the customer to receive. So when I said I started my career in the buying department, I would go on buying trips with to do the buying for the handbags, and I would have bags and bags of information at that time, because we didn't have a BlackBerry or an iPhone at that time. So I had trolleys full of files of sales data, Polaroid cameras and things. So for some appointments, I would really need that data to be able to guide me to thinking about how to move forward with the brand. And there are other appointments that maybe I don't look at them at all, because in that moment, I'm moved through my intuition or moved through seeing something that really inspired me. And then art takes over. So you're constantly recalibrating this dynamic between the art and the science. There isn't like a set formula. So it just keeps evolving. I guess the only thing that I would say is don't have the same formula every single time, because it's different. And you need to be able to manage that. So it's not rote in that way.
And is consumer behavior changing as much as people talk about? Do you see it as you look back over 25 plus years when you first started in the business? Is that really a big driver of change as you see it? Consumer change?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, we're consumers ourselves, right? Sure. So our lives have completely changed. You know, it's how information is shared and how you could do your research and how accessible the product is. I mean, that has completely changed. I think the human experience is changing also. So yeah. I think especially during COVID, everyone went work from home and digital, further into those echo chambers and isolation. But I think definitely now there is a desire for community and coming together and connectivity. So yeah, things are changing very fast.
Yeah, indeed, because, you know, when we are reflecting, you know, our experiences, you know, in Hong Kong, you know, the SARS, the pandemic, you know, not only the life, you know, has changed, but also, you know, perhaps the product that we purchase are also evolving, you know, around our needs as well. And I could see in your department store, you're offering, you know, different collections, you know, to feed that need. So then going back to my, you know, previous question, where do you get all these inspirations?
We travel. We travel and we experience life and we have conversations that inspire us. And I think we have to live a full life to be able to be inspired. We have to connect with people to be inspired. We have to be curious when we travel. And if you can't travel, you need to be curious in your own city to discover new places and not fall into the trap of being too comfortable and not going out of your comfort zone. There's this great book recently about how and I'll get you the author later, how humans when they go for what they want, they give up what they need. And what they want as a human being is autonomy, but what they need is connection. And that is why we're in the situation we are in, in our world today. And so I think we need to fight our little voices in our head to say, oh, okay, don't go out, or don't do this, or don't try this, or don't go out of your comfort zone here. You need to sometimes say, okay, just say yes to new experiences. Just say yes to new people.
Yeah, very well said, you know, about the wants and needs. I mean, in retail, particularly in the luxury lifestyle world, you know, it's not about what you need. It's about what you want. I mean, it's definitely, you know, the desire, the curiosity, you know, really bring us, you know, to, you know, different, you know, arenas. That's great. Now, Jennifer, let's talk about AI.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about how it has helped, you know, Lancroft's position in the market. Any good example for the practical application?
Yes. Well, it's now a norm, isn't it? It's a huge enabler of speed, productivity, and creativity. So there is a vast number of applications of AI, from administrative optimization to business optimization, to, for us anyway, the creative side of the business. I mean, in autumn winter 23, we used AI to create the whole campaign. It's called Quiet Speaks Volumes. And now those tools that enabled that campaign, we're now peppering through all our creative and visualization work to create content, and it's actually a very fun process. So it's very much a tool that enables us to, rather than a replacement of, our creativity and curation.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Jennifer, if you don't mind, you know, for the audience benefit, you know, can you expand, elaborate a little bit more about, you know, the Quiet Speak Volume, so people know, you know, what's it and how AI, you know, play in that campaign?
Oh, that whole campaign was created by AI. So it didn't exist. We didn't photograph it. There was no photographer. It was created through, you know, this application that we entered what we wanted from the visual, and the AI application created the campaign for us, and we tweaked it. We adjusted what we were looking for to get the right look for that campaign. So in that campaign, we were using models that actually don't exist, and the clothes that
I've seen that that was
yes
exciting. That was
yes
exciting. Yeah,
yes, really, yeah. Really fun. We didn't even have a studio to shoot this. It was all created in AI from inception to execution.
Well, that sounds good. I mean, it's really, you know, position yourself, you know, stay at the forefront, you know, when it's also come, you know, to AI. That's really, you know, exciting and inspiring.
Yeah, that was in 2023.
Yeah, it's been almost 2 years, right?
Yes, and our teams have really experimented with that application, a new application, to continue to evolve how that tool applies for us, for all our creative needs. So it's been a really great journey for the creative team, and they continue to experiment and play.
Well, thanks for sharing. You know, we're looking forward to see another round of newly creative program, you know, further down the road.
well, if you look at our campaigns and the content we create, you know, every single one has a little bit of AI in it now.
Right, great. So Jennifer, as Spencer Stuart, as a leadership advisory services firm, we always believe that, you know, it's people and talent that power the organization. With the CEO setting the tone for business to follow, what type of culture have you created, and how do you maintain and reinforce it?
Okay, this is a multi-layered answer. And I guess when you're asking about culture, you want the honest and unpolished version. So I will share my experience.
With that, the audience will love to hear that.
Yes. Well, in my experience, culture cannot be prescribed, right? It's not something that is prescriptive and cannot be created, so to speak. The entrepreneur and best-selling author Ben Horowitz said in his book entitled "What You Do Is Who You Are," he said a very powerful quote that really resonated with me, which is, "Culture is not a set of beliefs; it's a set of actions."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that really transforms culture from an intellectual concept to something that is real to be experienced when mm-hmm. rubber hits the road. So the honest answer is that we have learned many lessons in our effort to try and shape culture and create culture, some with amazing outcomes and some with less amazing outcomes. Mm-hmm. So I am now very much of the opinion that culture is not created, rather it is. So mm-hmm. the focus that we have as a leadership team is what we do as a leadership team. Like, what are the actions
mm-hmm. yeah.
that we're committed to?
Mm-hmm. Agree. We always talk about, you know, behavior. That is mm-hmm. action. Because, you mm-hmm. know, by example, you know, people see how you operate, you know, in a daily life, how you lead in a daily life. Now, Jennifer, I mean, if you can use a couple of words, you know, perhaps, you know, to describe the current culture right now, what will you say?
Well, I guess one action that we're talking about is, for example, accountability is a very big one for us that we spend a lot of time talking about. And for example, instead of talking about leading by example or any of those more intellectual concepts, I would say something very simple like turn up to meetings on time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a very pragmatic action that the whole leadership team can get. And that can demonstrate accountability in more powerful ways than putting on a wall accountability. Mm-hmm. you know what I mean? That's what we're talking about. Rubber meets the road.
Yeah, that's right. But on reflection, because you've been, you know, with the company now, you know, for 20 years. So sort of like comparing with now and then, you know, what are the sort of biggest difference you see in terms of the culture and behavior?
Yeah, different cycles of retail also bring out different types of actions. You know, we talk about wartime leadership and peacetime leadership. And those are very different sets of actions that you need to, you know, bring into the business at all the different times. So I would say, you know, just like the art and science, it's no one formula that works. I think you need to be very, very present and you need to be able to be very honest at every moment. And you need to be very fast to make some decisions on how we want to show up as a leadership team, how the business needs to show up to approach certain challenges. So it really is it's alive. It's not academic at all. It is a very alive experience.
Mm-hmm. Great. I love your comment about, you know, how do you show up, you know, as a leader and how do you show up as a team? I think that is something that, you know, it's so important. I mean, it doesn't sound very academic, but, you know, indeed, if you are able to do that, you know, that is really great example. You know, thanks for sharing.
And it's not static. It's not like, okay, today we show up a team like this and tomorrow it's going to be like this too. You have to really understand what the business needs and what the individuals need at that time. And so being present is very important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I have another question for you, Jennifer. Your father, Mr. Peter Wu,
yes.
He had himself, you know, a stellar business career. What lesson did he teach you about business? You already talk about that. Now, you know, as a senior leader yourself, have you been able to perhaps teach him a few things from your own experiences?
Great question. I never imagined that I'll be working with my father for so long and so closely. I have really learned so much from my father. He is a great teacher. Two advice that he repeats to me. The first one is know who you are and where you stand. The second one is hold on to the most important one or two things and get those things right and let go of the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And he repeats those often to me over the years and continues to. So when you ask the question the other way around of what he has learned from me, I would answer it like this. My mother always said that my father and I are perfectly opposite to each other and perfectly complementary. So I would say rather than learning, it's about a mutual appreciation of each other and the value that each of us brings to the other. And I think over the years, that has evolved beautifully. And 25 years on, I think I'm very proud of our working relationship. And I think it's been extremely fulfilling working with my father.
Wow, wonderful. I hope your father will be able to listen to our podcast and learn your advice and learn how you explain, about, the two opposite but complementary character and personalities. That's really interesting.
Well, right. Jennifer, yeah. we're sort of coming to the end of our podcast interview, but we'd just love to wrap it up with some just two or three really quickfire questions just to really layer on what we've heard already, but to find out a little bit more about you, really. You've quoted a couple of books there, so I guess you are a reader. We'd love to know what are you currently reading at the moment?
Well, I just finished a book called Obvious Atoms, and I'm about to start a book called Persuasion.
Which one subject or life skill would you love to learn more about?
History, hands down, because history repeats itself.
Yeah. You talked about your love of travel and how important that is. So which is your favorite city in the world and why?
Do you really have to answer that question?
Maybe I'll allow you to cities.
Of course. It's Hong Kong, of course.
Thank you, Jennifer.
There's more than meets the eye in Hong Kong. And I think recently it has been misunderstood. So we'll leave it at that. And we would like to issue a personal invitation to everyone to come to Hong Kong.
You've talked a lot about the importance of qualities in people. What's the quality that you value most in people?
Personal responsibility. It's something that I speak about in business and also at home with my daughter, teaching her this understanding of personal responsibility from a young age. And it's funny because when she was like 4 or 5 years old, I came home one day after work and she ran to me like disaster, right, with this face and said, Mommy. I said, what? She's like, you have to go back to work. I was like, why? She's like, because the taps don't work. The water isn't coming. We have no water. You must go back to work to earn money so we can have water. So she really understands the correlation between working and earning.
So I have to ask, are you building your daughter an office so you'll trick her when she's thinks she's doing an internship?
Well, I think this generation perhaps is smarter than mine. I don't think she could be duped that easily.
But look, Jennifer, it's been an amazing conversation. Really, really appreciate it. You've covered an enormous amount and lots of food for thought, certainly. And Catherine, thank you for sharing this podcast interview as well. It's been great. Thank you for listening to this episode of the World Retail Podcast, part of our special series called Retail Leadership Voices, brought to you in partnership with the global team from the executive search firm Spencer Stuart Associates. We hope today's conversation gave you valuable insights into retail leadership through the experience of a proven leader. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and don't forget to leave us a review. It really helps others find the show. To stay up to date with the latest from the World Retail Congress and to access more exclusive content, visit us at www.worldretailcongress.com and follow us on LinkedIn. We'll be back soon with more thought-provoking discussions from the front lines of retail. Until then, thanks for listening.